What's up, everybody, and welcome to the podcast, Dog Mom Mentality, where we strive to play with dogs and not emotions. I am your virtual bestie, Caroline, and I have my furry friend here, Layla, and we are going to give you a break from your day to talk about all things dogs and emotional well-being. If you have ever been emotionally affected by your dog, then this is the podcast for you. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Dog Mom Mentality Podcast. I don't know what possessed me to do that, but this episode is with a dear friend, Nicole. She was on, 2 months ago, I think, talking about living in New York City with her dog, Sen. And she has come back on to talk about living with celiac disease and how that affects her mental health and how that affects her life with her dog, Sen. So we get into all the details on what celiac disease is, how that's different from just a gluten intolerance, how that affected her growing up, how that affects her even feeding Sen and like going out and trying to find dog food without gluten in it. To remind you a little bit about our guest, Nicole is a designer and illustrator living in New York City. She currently lives in Astoria, Queens with her husband, Nick, dog, Sen, rabbits, Pickle, and Elliot, plus 20 other pets. Sen is a 4-year-old village dog from Baku, Azerbaijan. I think I said that right this time. And she has been living with Nicole in New York City for most of her life, and you might have recently heard her in my series on location and lifestyle. Nicole was diagnosed with celiac disease in 2002, though she had been symptomatic and undergoing testing for the majority of her childhood. Because of this, Nicole has lived the majority of her life on a strict gluten-free diet. Growing up with strict dietary restrictions, even necessary ones, has had a great impact on Nicole's relationship with food and trust in her own body. But over time, with the help of supportive friends and family, she has gained confidence and started her healing journey, which we love to hear. So I will let this episode start because it is a good, long, very conversational one. And yeah, let's get into this episode with Nicole. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Dog Mom Mentality Podcast. We are having a repeat guest on today, Nicole. And since being a goober, and we are going to talk about celiac disease, chronic illnesses, mental health, and how those all like intertwine, and how we can use our dogs to help us, because Sen is getting trained to be a gluten sniffer. I don't know if that's like the right terminology, but that's like the first word that came to mind. She's going to sniff out gluten so that Nicole does not have a reaction.
my queen of bread sniffing, my dog who allegedly will save my life one day, but we'll see.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, what have you been up to? I know like you kind of gave us, you know, a bit of an update last time. We talked about living in the city. We had so many people like love those episodes. So it's probably been like a month or a month and a half since we talked last, maybe even 2 months. So kind of catch us up on what you guys are doing for the summer.
Yeah. So this summer, we're mostly taking it easy and staying home. We do have like some travel planned for September. Our like long delayed honeymoon will finally happen. But for the summer, we're mostly taking it easy. I've got a bunch of weddings to go to. Mostly staying home and hiking and just being in the city. I honestly love summer in the city. It's like such a vibe.
Was it last summer that you did your road trip?
Yeah, that was last May, so like early summer.
Okay. Yeah, because we met during that time in Lexington, and I remember this now. We were at like a pizza place,
And I just did not realize that you had celiac disease. And so I was like, oh my gosh, like, I had no idea. And it's not something that we think about often because nobody in our family has a gluten sensitivity or a celiac disease.
Yeah, it's definitely funny because it's like, sometimes I almost like avoid talking about it when it's not food time, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I kind of like, I joke with Nick that it's one of my like only topics of conversation that seems to come up in small talk, especially at weddings.
Yeah.
Like we keep going to family weddings and friends' weddings and it's like, oh, I'm talking to a person who I like sort of know, and then an hors d'oeuvres person passes and the conversation immediately switches to gluten. And it's like, I'm like, I have other conversation topics.
Yeah.
I don't mind talking about it. Like I clearly signed up to talk about gluten and talk about like celiac disease and living with it. It's just funny because it's like, I feel like my question to other celiacs is like, do you ever get sick of talking about it? Like, do you ever just like, do you ever just wish it was super easy? But it's never, it's not. So it's just like the forever topic.
Well, I feel like there are a lot of questions around it from somebody who doesn't have celiac disease or like a gluten sensitivity, because I guess my questions are like, okay, how do you literally live? Like, how do you find food that doesn't have gluten in it? Because I feel like that would be so hard. My husband's girlfriend is, or not my husband's girlfriend, my husband's sister's girlfriend is a vegan. And I was like, literally, how do you find stuff? And so then it just opened up my eyes to like how many options there are nowadays. But then my second question would be like, are you gluten-free by choice or because you need it? Because I feel like it's kind of trendy now to be gluten-free.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, I'm not gluten-free by choice.
Right.
If I could eat bread, I promise you I would. I've been gluten-free for, like, almost 20 years. No, geez, I don't know. For a very long time, over 20 years. Mm-hmm. I was diagnosed in, like, 2001, 2002. I was in... I think that's around when it was. I know I was in like the summer of first grade. Mm-hmm. I was really sick up until then. I pretty much always had stomach issues, always had like really intense GI symptoms. I was always like throwing up and having GI symptoms and having bloat and stomach pain. Mm-hmm. So like my whole like childhood, I guess, like up until first grade, I was always sick and always in doctor's offices. And back then, like now people test for it pretty quickly if you come in with GI symptoms, but back then it wasn't as much of a like there's GI symptoms, test for celiac, so it was the last thing they tested me for. Mm-hmm. Which meant that I went through like 2 years of like blood tests and just every test first to see what else I might have, and then finally they were like, okay, well like this is the last thing we're going to test you for, if it's not this it's IBS. Mm-hmm. Which I don't, so I'm not a doctor. Everything that I say is from my own experience, and like certain things I could misremember, and I'm going to be like really upfront about that.
Right.
So that like if you are listening and you experience like GI symptoms or anything similar, like just find a doctor who knows what they're talking about and talk to them.
Right.
But I will speak from my own experience, and like after it took 2 years for them to test me for it, and finally they did, and they realized it was celiac, and back then I was like too young to really understand. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Like, when you're a kid, you don't fully grasp, like, okay, like, not only can you never eat this thing again, but it's, like, a lifelong thing.
Right.
And you don't, like, kids don't have a grasp of time. So, for me, all I understood was, like, I can't eat bagels now. And then, slowly, it, like, expanded, like, my mom being, like, okay, well, you can't eat this either. And, like, you can't do this. Like, mm-hmm. And I do want to say that, like, all things considered, my mom was, like, a huge support. Like, if you or a friend or a child who you are raising has celiac, like, there is, like, a really intense burden of care that a lot of people don't always, like, think about or realize. Like, I've heard it compared to other, like, really intense, like, chronic illnesses that might have, like, a strong burden of care, because not only does it affect, like yes, this gluten-free diet is the only cure for this mm-hmm. like autoimmune disease, but it also like it is easy to feel like it weighs you down when you're younger, and it's easy to feel like it's like pulling you back from doing what you want to do, because like the I guess like the average person is eating like at least two or three meals a day, mm-hmm. which means like two or three times a day it's going to come up. And then right. like on top of that, like any product that you use, if you're drinking something, if you're like, I know some people are really worried about like, there's a lot of misinformation out there. Like some people are really worried about like lipsticks or like mouthwashes and things like that. It's just like surprising how many things gluten is in. And then once you start going down the rabbit hole, it's really hard to like get out of the rabbit hole of like seeing the world as like potentially, I always joke that it's poison. I don't think of it as poison, but I just think it's the funniest way to think about it.
Yeah.
So it's like seeing the everything as like, this could potentially poison me and I'm not really sure.
Yeah, it's like potentially dangerous. Like you just don't know.
Yeah, and it's definitely like, I know a lot of other celiacs that I've talked to, like either will go down the route of like kind of doom and gloom and really worried about like everything. And in the same way that like when you have a reactive dog, you're going to pull back and your first instinct might be like to pull back from everything and to restrict everything.
Avoid.
And like, this could be a risk. I'm going to avoid all of the risks, but like avoiding all of the risks is also going to make you be thinking about the risks constantly. Mm. And I think that like a lot of people kind of go down that path. There's also a lot of people that I've heard that have been like, oh, I know this person with celiac disease, but they're like really lax with it. And they like, will cheat and like they're just always sick, and I'm like, oh, that sucks so much for them.
Right.
Like it sucks so much that like the treatment or like the lifestyle that you have to live in order to be like healthy and active and like okay is definitely difficult for some people, and it can be like prohibitively difficult for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Especially if you're just starting out,
right? That as a child, like, and just depending on if your family has experience with it, because I think you said that like some of your aunts have celiac disease, right?
Yeah, so I was actually the first in my family that was diagnosed.
Okay, because I thought that some of your family had it, and I was like, why did they not test you for that sooner if you knew that your aunts had it?
Yeah.
But that makes sense if you were the first.
So I was the first. I was diagnosed when I was like in first grade, and then my cousins were both diagnosed, I think like middle school, high school, like around there. So they were aware of, like, what celiac disease was when they were diagnosed, but also, like, I recently talked to one of my cousins, and she was like, we had no idea how, like, intense it was when it was just you. Like, we remember, like, our mom, like, baking gluten-free cookies, but didn't, like, have the understanding of, like, what it actually meant, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, no, it does. I loved your comparison to, like, reactive dogs and, like, the thought of, like, doom and gloom and, like, how you could just, like, recede and, like, have a negative thought process about everything. Like, that is such a good comparison.
Yeah, and I think about it a lot now because I've been switching Sun to, like, also eat fully gluten-free. For a while, she was eating a kibble with gluten in it, and I just, like, really vigorously washed my hands and pretended it was fine. Mm-hmm. But if... like, we are successful in teaching. I'm saying that I'm, like, so scared to, like, say that we're, like, definitely trying to do gluten detection training because I'm, like, afraid we're going to fail, but whatever. If we end up succeeding with it, like, she doesn't need to be on a gluten-free diet so that her breath doesn't smell like it, because it could, like, in theory, like, mess with her ability to sense, like, really low amounts if her breath is always smelling like it.
Right, right.
So even with that, I was, like, contacting, like, dog food manufacturers and being like, hey, I know this is a silly question, but this is, like, really serious. Like, can you just contact your manufacturing facility and, like, see? And it's so weird to ask, like, okay, like, this is what I'm allergic to. It's not an allergy, but I say allergic because it's easier to just explain to people. But when I was talking to the, like, customer service at a few different dog food manufacturers, I was like, hey, like, I know this sounds silly, but, like, it is very serious. I am, like, very, very allergic to gluten. I have celiac disease. I know that this formula doesn't have gluten in it, but can you contact your manufacturer to find out if it shares a production line with
right.
any formulas that do contain gluten? Because even if, like, this one bag isn't
right.
contaminated, it means that it would have a really high chance of being contaminated. And a couple companies were like, oh, we can't possibly guarantee that. And I was like, okay, well, then I'm just going to go somewhere else.
Right.
They were like, oh, well, like, you should just do this. And I'm like, no, it's fine. Like, thank you for your honesty.
But yeah.
Moving on.
Have you found one that you are going to go with yet? Or is it still kind of trial and error?
So the trainer that we're working with provided like a full spreadsheet of like dog food companies that she's contacted. Mm-hmm. And then also company, like you can ask her to contact a company for right. you. I just had been doing it myself already. So we're currently feeding Origin, which is fully gluten-free. I believe it's, I think their full line is gluten-free. And there's a few other brands that are either fully gluten-free or they just don't share, like, manufacturing equipment between their gluten-free and their gluten-containing, like, lines. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely, like, it was an experience to be like, okay, I do this, like, all the time for myself. Now I'm going to do it for her. Mm-hmm. It's easier with treats, I find, because right. a lot of things that are freeze-dried are, like, yeah, it's, like, single ingredient. Like, it's pretty rare that most of the single ingredient treat companies would like share a production line with like a grain right. containing item. Yeah, for the yeah. So it's definitely like it's easy to get caught up in the doom and gloom of like I have to do all this Google research just to like I have to contact all these people just to feed it food for my dog that I like know won't make me sick if I don't wash my hands, or like I have to if I want to go out to eat, I generally we'll check like 4 different apps to check for like what other celiacs have said about it, like etc. And even then once I'm there, I'm like, I am open to eating what you give me, but I need to be safe.
Right. Like, right.
I'm not picky. I'm just like, yeah.
Yeah. No. And I mean, rightfully so. Like it's like we should accommodate you. People should accommodate those with illnesses so that they can also have a good time. Well, we're kind of like halfway through, or we're not halfway, but like we've talked about it a lot, but I do want to make a clarification. Like, what is the difference between celiac disease and just being gluten intolerant?
Okay.
Or is it like the same?
So to start, like what is gluten? Like what the fuck is gluten? Mm-hmm. Gluten is a protein that's found in certain grains, including like wheat, rye, barley, sometimes oats, but it's complicated, so I'm not going to go super into it. And those grains are used really commonly in food, but also in other things. So what gluten is if you've ever made bread or you've made something containing wheat flour, when you work the dough, it gets like kind of gummy and sticky and stretches. Right. The gluten is what does that. Mm-hmm. It's sort of gummy and it can kind of pick up air bubbles and it helps bread like hold its shape, which is why when you're baking gluten-free you'll often have to add like some kind of like xanthan gum or another like binding agent. Mm-hmm. What celiac disease is, so gluten is just a protein. It's just a protein. Like some people are fine, some people's bodies are fine with it. Some people's bodies might like have different reactions to it, just like any other substance. So a gluten intolerance, like you might have GI symptoms or a variety of things in relation to like not being able to digest or some other thing related to gluten. A lot of people have like, I've heard some people say that they have like, what's the word, like inflammation or something right. similar related to gluten. So that's generally gluten intolerance, which I don't have, so I can't speak in intense detail. But what celiac disease is it's a totally separate thing. It's an autoimmune disease. So the like kind of very condensed history of celiac is that before scientists knew or doctors knew that gluten caused it, it was essentially like an autoimmune disease, which is where your immune system is attacking your body, mm-hmm. and it caused intense GI symptoms, but also other things. So like, when I eat gluten, it's not just that my body can't digest it. It's that, like, my immune system sees the gluten and is like, oh, fuck, and attacks itself.
Right. Like, so, you have the flu or something, right?
Yeah, so part of it is, like, one thing to think with celiac is that because your immune system is, like, essentially attacking your body, every single person who has celiac disease might have a different, like, kind of personalized reaction.
Right, okay.
So the most common symptom is, like, GI symptoms and bloat. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people will also report, like, brain fog or just, like, or I know my aunt had, like, a lot of hair loss. I know people who've had, like, joint pain. Gotcha. There's a lot of different things that could come up with it. And I recently talked to my cousin about, like, what our kind of, like, different reactions are. And we both agreed, like, if I get cross-contaminated, like, for the next few days, I can't focus at all. Like, mm-hmm. my brain feels like, I don't know if you've ever had, like, when you're having just a really off day and you just right. have, like, such brain fog that you yeah. just feel like you're on a different planet.
I got
really
bad brain fog whenever I was, like, after COVID. Like, a few months after COVID, yeah. I would get brain fog, yeah.
Yeah, so even after, like, GI symptoms go away, like, I might get a migraine or I might not, but the brain fog is, like, always. And it sounds silly to be like, oh, it's, like, brain fog, but it's, like, the way that I generally explain it when someone's like, what happens if you eat gluten? I'll be like, if I get cross-contaminated, I'm going to have a really bad night and a bad couple of days after this. If I have more than that, I'll probably have to call in sick work for the next few days. Like, mm-hmm. it's not ideal.
Right. And there's no way to, like, fix yeah. it. Right.
Yeah. That's the other thing. It's like, there's not a magic pill that I can take to, like, make it stop. It just is. Like, mm-hmm. and I think that there's certain, like, there might be something a doctor could do, but, like, there's nothing that I can do, basically.
Right.
And it is, like, definitely, like, I don't know. I guess it's, like, again, it's easy to get sucked into, like, the doom and gloom of it. The thing that, like, I guess I really want to push for, like, people who either know someone who has celiac or, like, people who may have been, like, freshly diagnosed, like, the baby celiacs are, like, you're gonna be okay. It's not easy, and it does infect, like, every thought in your life, mm-hmm. but that's okay, and, like, you can still enjoy life, and you can still enjoy food. Mm-hmm. I think it's, like, really easy for people who are either gluten, like, gluten-free, or any other, like, restrictive diet, especially restrictive diets that are for, like, medical reasons, but I'm sure this is also the case if it's, like, a strong, like if you're really set in veganism and you're not in a place right. where it's necessarily easy to do, I think it can be really easy to, like, obsess over food and, like, kind of break your relationship with food and the people around you. But, like, I see you. I know it's hard. You can do it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's really good to, like, educate and, like, advocate around these topics that a large majority of people just don't have education around. Like, I never heard about this in high school and not really college. Like, in high school, there was, you know, a few people that had a peanut butter allergy, but, like, that was it. And so you, like, I just didn't really know about celiac disease growing up until I was probably, like, in college. So I think, like, just the education and advocacy around it is really important. So you talked some about, like, you got diagnosed in first grade and your mom was, like, a good support for, you know, making sure that all of your needs were taken care of. But I'm curious to know, like, do you ever feel like it made you grow up quicker because you had to learn how to, like, maybe advocate for yourself whenever it came to your food and, like, ask questions, like, ask people things that young kids, like, probably never have to ask adults.
Yeah, I think it definitely, like, has a certain sense of, like, isolation, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So, like, my mom did, like, everything she could to make sure that, like, I always had food and I was always, like, safe and fed. But I think it's really easy, like, if, like, let's say you're the only kid with celiac. And you're me, and it's 2000 whatever,
right?
And you're in third grade and kids still bring in cupcakes every time they have a birthday. Mm-hmm. So what my mom would do is she would give my teacher, like, a bunch of, like, candy and, like, things that were safe and shelf stable, or, like, she would maybe give them brownies in the morning or something. Generally, like, there was always, like, a snack for me that was, like, shelf-stable and in the back of the classroom that my mom basically gave the teacher and was like, if everyone else is eating and Nicole isn't eating, like, give her something.
Right.
And even if she's not hungry, like, at least she's not just, like, staring at the other kids.
Right.
But, yeah, I think to an extent it did, or at least it made me, like, a lot more self-aware of, like, the food around me, the things around me, and, like, I guess just even, like, my own body. Like, I have a really strong memory of, like, my first Halloween celiac, or maybe my second, I'm not sure. I was, like, trick-or-treating with a bunch of friends, and my mom was like, so you can't eat anything with, and again, I'm, like, a very small child, so, like, yeah, as an adult, yeah, this wouldn't happen, but, like, she was like, you can't eat anything with Krispies, you can't eat anything with bread or cookies, but anything else, just, like, show me if you're not sure. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm, like, 7 years old, I, like, probably can't even fucking read.
Right.
And also back then, I feel like they wouldn't have ingredients on, like, the little, like,
Yeah, on the small ones.
I feel like they do now, but they definitely did not back then, or at least, like, they weren't, they were all, like, modified food starch, which, like, means nothing, just means, like, question mark. And I had eaten, like, I want to say, like, as many Twizzlers as a child could eat, which is a lot.
Yeah.
And that night, I was literally, like, dying. Like, not dying, like, in the hospital, like, the worst stomach ache a child.
Do Twizzlers have gluten in it?
Yeah.
Oh.
And
oh,
I,
my gosh.
Like, as an adult, I'm like, yeah, of course, I'll read everything. You never know. Yeah. But as a kid, you're like, it doesn't have cookies. It doesn't have Krispies.
Right.
Like, it's not bread. Like, I must be fine. I was literally like, I had to miss like 2 days of school.
Oh my gosh. Poor baby Nicole.
And then, of course, my mom is probably like, oh my god, my child, like, how do I protect you from the universe? Yeah. Like, you eat candy and then you get sick.
Right. Do you think, like, it affected her at times more than you just because she was, like, so scared and, like, you were her baby?
I think to an extent, like, my mom is still, like, very involved in my, like, medical stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I think that, like, she was very ready to just, like, drop everything and bring me to the doctor at, like, any time. Because it's kind of, like, you, I feel like if you, I'm not a parent. So, it's, like, if with even with son, it's, like, I can ignore things until I know it's something, if that makes
sense.
Like,
right.
If she has, like, one bad day of, like, diarrhea, I'm, like, okay, this is, like, a bad day. If she has a few days, then it's, like, okay, I'll bring you in.
Mm-hmm.
And if the doc, if the vet were to tell me, like, this is something serious and long-term, then I'm, like, focused in on her poop every single
day.
Right. And it does not leave my mind. And I really feel like that's kind of how celiac is. It's, like, yeah, everyone has a tummy ache every now and then. Everyone will, like, eat something and have a bad day. But, like, not everyone knows, like, the exact thing that causes it.
Mm-hmm.
And thinks that it's everywhere.
Yeah, like, they don't know the exact intensity. How do you feel like it's affected your husband and all of your pets, like, even beyond Sin? I know you talked about trying to get her on a gluten-free diet so that she can do like the scent detection, but even before that, like, so you said her food had gluten in it and you were just like washing your hands like nonstop. So, like, how has it affected your husband and all of your pets?
So I feel like a lot of celiacs that I've talked to have very different, like, or not different, but very, like, specific household boundaries. So, for example, what I do is I personally don't buy gluten, except for training. My husband will sometimes buy, like, a gluten pasta or, like, a loaf of bread, and we have separate peanut butters. And we have separate jellies, and we have separate, like, containers that would come in contact. If he puts butter on bread, I'll be like, okay, just, like, put it in a different part of the fridge so, like,
right,
I don't grab it.
Right.
So where I'm not, like, a fully gluten-free household, but I know people who are.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm probably, like, 95% a gluten-free household because, again, like, I don't It's not that I, like, have a boundary and refuse to buy it. It's just, like, if I'm the one shopping, I'm not going to grab it because I hate touching it. Because it just, like, it fucks with my brain. But I know some people who will... I talked to one gluten detection trainer who was like, oh, yeah, I have the gluten fridge, which is, like, a mini fridge that I keep my gluten training supplies and my husband's beers.
That's so funny. That is funny. Yeah, I was going to say, like, do you have alcohol in your house? I mean, I know whenever you were here, like, both you and your husband, like, drink a beer with us, so.
Yeah, we're really bad about remembering to buy things. Okay. So we'll just, like, buy alcohol when we want it.
Right, but, like, when you're out or whatever.
Yeah, it is, like, annoying because I like beer but can't drink it. There are gluten-free beers. I drink them. I do. They're just, like, slightly harder to find. There's, like, two or three brands. There was one in Colorado that, like, had me considering moving to Colorado.
Oh, my gosh.
For no reason. I'm just like, just wow, I can eat. I'm like, wow, this, like, it's easy to find gluten-free beer over here. It's just, like, everywhere. This is so great. And, yes, I know about Glutenberg. And, yes, I know about Redbridge for people who are listening. but, yeah, it's also really funny because, like, I am such, like, a foodie, but I can't eat, like, anything. But, yeah, no, with Nick, I feel like online I've heard from a couple of, like, celiac dietitians that, like, the burden of care is really intense on, like, a significant other. Because, like, yeah, I am the one who is eating gluten-free, and my husband has to live in, like, a 95% gluten-free house. And, like, if he cooks anything with gluten, like, he has to be, like, really... thinking about how he cleans things and, like, what touches things, etc. But, like, I feel like we kind of have a system figured out where, like, I know what foods he would not part with. And when he eats food that I cook, it's gluten-free and it's fine, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So what about with, like, your pets, though? Because I know you have, all the pets. Like, you have rabbits, you have Sin, like... Yeah, I don't know, so, like, what do rabbits eat? Because I know that you put, like, hay and stuff, like, in their...
Yeah, so with the rabbits, their pellet food actually does contain gluten, but Nick feeds them, so I just, like, don't really think about it.
Okay.
So he feeds them. If I feed them, I'll usually just, like, I have, like, serving, like, those, like, gloves that you use in food service. I will use those and just, like, grab them a scoop, pop it in their cage, take off the gloves, wash my hands if I have to feed them. But, like, Nick usually does their pellets. Other than that, they eat hay, which is just grass. I hope it doesn't have gluten because that'll ruin my life. Yeah. It shouldn't.
I don't know why. I was, like, thinking to myself, I was like, wait, does hay have gluten in it? Like, I had a question.
But that's like the celiac disease vibe is you're just like, oh, I'm just eating this. Wait. Hold on. Like, and that's a big problem with, like, online, like, TikTok and, like, everything. There's so much misinformation about it too. Like, I follow this dietitian who reposts, I think she's celiac dietitian on Instagram, but she'll repost a lot of other celiac content and be like, hey, like, this is how it actually is. Like, I'm just letting you know, like, please do not freak out. So, like, there was one person who was like, oh, I just went to the dentist and I found out, like, every single toothpaste they had there contained gluten and they couldn't do anything to my teeth. And the dietitian was like, okay, listen, there have been studies on this. Like, this is how much, like, load of gluten you would actually be ingesting and it's negligible. And, like, this is, I think it's, like, 20 mmg or something like that is the, like, limit of, like, what most celiacs react at, which is an insanely small amount, but, like, is not, there's not enough gluten in the toothpaste or, like, contaminated gluten in the toothpaste that it would probably not make you sick.
Right.
And she does a lot of content like that. It's like, I understand that, like, the world is terrifying, but, like, this is where you should have caution and this is where it's okay to relax. And, like,
Yeah, that's really good to have, like, a debunking source, because if it were me, I would definitely be, like, scared of the world, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's, like, that's why there's this, like, big dichotomy in celiacs of, like, some of us are, like, terrified of the world, and the rest of us are just, like, sick and being, like, very nihilistic about, like, oh, well, like, I'll just eat this, and, like, it's probably fine, but I don't know. And, like, that was me for a really long time, where I was just, like, I do not have the mental capacity to worry about every single thing I put in my body, so I will try my best right now, and sometimes I will get sick. Mm-hmm. And that was, like, me for a very long time. And it kind of still is sometimes, but I try my best to, like, take care of my body.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so the one thing that, like, I really want to share, which is not mine, I read this on the internet, and I feel like it helped me a lot. So I want to share it, okay. Is that before we knew what gluten was, mm-hmm. celiac disease was a disease that killed children. It was a disease that if you were diagnosed with this, there was a very high chance that you would not make it to 18. Mm-hmm. The gluten-free diet is not a symptom of celiac disease. It is the cure for it that we mm-hmm. know currently. And our, like, ancestors did not get the opportunity to, like, have this.
Right.
And right. even though it is, like, an intense burden of care for a lot of people, it is, like, it is enabling you, it is nourishing you, and it is helping you to, like,
to live, survive thrive.
And to live and be healthy. And, like, at the end of the day, like, a gluten-free diet is not a symptom. It's like, literally the cure. And, of course, we'd all right. love to, like, have an easier cure, have, like, I don't know, a button we could press, and, like, now it's not an issue. But, like, it's not, although it feels like it's something that holds you back a lot of the time, it's actually, like, it can be empowering to know that, like, you are, I don't know, like, my grandmother probably had celiac disease, and she was never diagnosed, and she was sick her entire life. And I don't, that isn't, I mean, I guess I am sick, but, like, that's not me,
right.
you know.
Right, but it's different. Like, you yeah. definitely have it better off than her because you just have the knowledge to
yeah.
make these, like, good decisions. And, I mean, I think it comes with any, like, chronic illness or illness, even some, you know, like, mental illnesses, like anxiety and depression. Like, if you have those diagnoses and, like, you're aware about it, then you have to make lifestyle changes in order to live better. I mean, it's just like with your dog, too. Like, if your dog is reactive yeah. and, like, you're constantly getting frustrated with their reactivity, like, you have to make lifestyle changes in order to live a happier, fulfilling life.
Yeah, and then even then, like, those lifestyle changes are helping you to live a more fulfilling life. Mm-hmm. And if they feel like they're hurting you, then, like, maybe you might have either, like, a different, I don't want to say treatment plan, because that's, like,
right.
what a celiac diagnosis would be, but, like, a lifestyle plan. Like, the changes in your lifestyle are intended to help you. They're not, they should be serving you. You shouldn't be serving them. Like,
that's yeah, this is giving
the
me
end
like,
of the day.
Yeah, this is giving me, like, a totally different, like, outlook on how I see it now, kind of from the outside looking in, versus how somebody with celiac disease kind of perceives it. Because
yeah.
it's just, like, you're giving it such a, like, brighter outlook that, like, say if, you know, I had a kid one day and they ended up having celiac disease, like, without this conversation, I probably would be, like, scared for my kid. You know what I mean? Whereas,
yeah.
like, this is really shedding a lot of light onto, like, a very different, like, perspective to it that's good, honestly. Like, really good.
Yeah, and there is, like, so much that you can do with celiac. If you're a baby celiac, download Find Me Gluten Free right now. and joke that it's your app to find a GF, and it's the funniest joke at every party you'll ever go to. And
yeah.
I'm not lying, and I totally have a good sense of humor. But, yeah, it's just, like, there's so many things. Like, I think I had someone reach out to me recently, and she might listen to this podcast because it was on Dogstagram, but, like, we'll see. And she said, like, oh, my daughter recently got the go-ahead to do, like, a gluten-free, soy-free diet, and I'm so scared for her. Like, what do you do? We're Italian. Like, how do we eat? And
yeah.
I was like, I have so many recommendations. But, like, it's so easy to, like, hear the diagnosis and immediately just, like, worry about everything you're losing and, like, mm-hmm. grieve the food that you could have eaten, which sounds ridiculous, but, like, food nourishes you, and you're allowed
right.
to love food, and, like, you are entitled to have a good relationship with food just by, like, being a person.
Mm-hmm.
So, I was like, okay, well, there's, like, a bunch of, I guess this is just general advice, but if you, suddenly your life changes and you have a restrictive diet, like, the best way to think about it is, like, a puzzle. Like, You're not trying to replace your foods. You're not trying to find the best gluten-free bread that tastes exactly like the bread that you already love, because you will not find that. Mm-hmm. And that sucks, but you will find such amazing, nourishing food within, like, your gluten restrictions. Mm-hmm. A lot of Indian food is naturally gluten-free, and that's amazing. Like, they
get a lot of Yeah, because Indian food is great.
And you'll find so many good foods if you have, like, now you have this restriction, but, like, you can still find amazing food. The Celiac Society in Italy is killer, and they have it way better than us Americans as celiacs. There's so much good Italian gluten-free food. I cannot wait to go to Italy again. We're going for our honeymoon, and I'm literally so excited just to, like, eat food.
Wait, that's so interesting, because, like, you think of Italy, and you think of, like, pasta and bread and, like, little cute desserts. So I would, like, never think, like, that they had a, like, a great gluten-free community. Like,
and it's so almost, like, my mom is Italian. She's, like, from Italy.
Yeah.
And a few years ago, I was in Florence with my mom, and my brother and my dad were, like, getting sandwiches at some place that, like, someone recommended to them. And we were, like, wandering down the block, and we see a sign that says, like, Senza Glutine, and my mom's, like, right there, like, Senza Glutine, let's go in right now. It was a fully gluten-free bakery that had Italian pastries that you literally can't find in the States, and my mom was literally like, oh my god, you cannot find these in the States, like, with gluten.
Yeah.
Like, I was so excited. We literally bought, like, so many different, like, pastries and just, like, sat in the streets of Florence and, like, ate all these different pastries.
Oh my gosh.
And that's, like, something you can look forward to as a celiac. Like, yeah, maybe you can't go into every single bakery and get, like, the first thing you see, and that is difficult, but, like, you can also stumble upon or do research and find restaurants and, like, have these experiences with food and with life that, like, are super fun and spark joy, and, like, it can feel like a game once you, like, really get into it.
I was gonna say, like, it kind of sounds like a little bit of a game, like a little bit of, like, a mystery game, like detecting where gluten is, but, like, make it fun. So I loved how you described that.
Yeah, and it definitely can be really hard in some places, and I want to be, like, really clear that, like, depending on where you live, it can be super hard. If, like, I know when we were road tripping, there were some places where I literally was like, there is no, like, when we're in Nebraska, there is no restaurant that I'm gonna find. Like, if you run a gluten-free restaurant in Nebraska, I'm so happy for you. But we were, like, on, like, I-80 or I-90, and just, like, we're like, there is no food here for me. And I was like, okay, well, where's the closest Walmart? I'll get a bunch of, like cheese and cold cuts, and I'm gonna make myself a little charcuterie board, and we're gonna have some hotel charcuterie and wine, and, like, that'll be our night. And, like, yeah, maybe a restaurant would have been fun and easy and brainless, but sometimes you just have to do it, and it just be... I do know that, like, the celiacs that I know are some of the most prepared food people.
Oh, I bet.
Like, yeah. It's like,
I bet they're creative. Like, I bet you're super creative with food.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so funny, too. It's like, I'll be going, I think when we went to Helen, Georgia recently, my brother's wife, my sister-in-law, also has celiac, which is not a coincidence. It's not even a coincidence. He just, like, dated someone with celiac, and she felt very at home with our family who understands it. You know, like, it's like a coincidence, but it's also not.
Yeah.
But once we go down there, I'm like, Anita, don't even worry. I have, like, 4 restaurants saved on my phone where I know we can safely eat, and I've already, like, done all the research. And I don't care what order we go to those 4 restaurants in. Like, we can go to one a few times. We can go around. We'll be fine, and we'll be safe. And I also know where the grocery store is, so, like, don't even worry. And, like, that is how I travel, which is funny, because it's, like, I like to be spontaneous, but the way that I eat food is I'll just be, like, I know that these 5 restaurants are safe, and I can pick between them. And I haven't planned necessarily, like, what I'll eat each night, but I know what my options are, and it makes me feel very, like, safe. Because if I go to one restaurant and it's closed, I'm not fucked.
Yeah, yeah, or, like, totally.
Yeah.
So I feel like your outlook and perspective on it now is very, like, healthy, very hopeful. Has it always been that way? Or, like, growing up, did you have a more complicated relationship with food because of celiac disease?
I've definitely had a very complicated relationship with food. And, like, even now, I would say that, like, my outlook definitely, like, will shift a little bit depending on the day. Like, I feel very confident feeding myself at home right now, but it can definitely be difficult, especially if I travel and I don't have full, like, control of where I am. For example, like, if I'm taking a class in, like, one location, I don't get to choose, like, where I am at any given time. So even if I research, like, okay, well, here's all the restaurants I could eat at, like, I'll probably have to pack a lunch for myself, which is fine, and I do it all the time, but it becomes like, okay, now I'm going here. When am I going to eat? What am I going to eat? Not just, do I have to pack a lunch? Are there going to be snacks? Should I bring snacks? Should I bring water? Should I bring this? And then suddenly I'm bringing, like, a full day's worth of food to an event that no one else is bringing food to. And I think that that does get very overwhelming sometimes, or, like, it does kind of feel prohibitive with, like, traveling or, like, eating easy foods or getting foods at, like, a rest stop or something. It's kind of like, and then when I was a kid, I would say it's very complicated to explain when you're a child to, like, friends' moms. Mm-hmm. Like, of course my mom would already have been like, these are the things she can eat and these are the things she can't eat. But, like, when you're, like, a child and you're not really in a position to be like, can you cook it this way? Can you cook it this way? Can you wash everything twice? Can you double check? Like, it feels like it's very easy to feel like you're a burden and that, like, oh, when I'm not here, this family cooks very normally. And in order to feed me, they have to do all these extra steps. And I think it's very easy to feel like you're a burden. And I have definitely felt like that in the past and, like, still do sometimes, but try to, like, find ways to, like, honor the way that I feel, but also, like, feel better, basically.
Right. And, like, not to take away from, like, celiac at all, but, like, so much of this conversation is just, like, reminding me of conversations that I've had with dog owners whose they feel like, you know, their dog being reactive or having behavioral issues is, like, a burden to their family or their friends or, like, people coming over or, like, going out and doing things. And, like, whether it's separation anxiety and so, like, they can't stay out, like, for a super long time or, like, their dog is, you know, maybe a little bit aggressive, and so, like, they can't have people over or, like, family over, and, like, a lot of times it's, like, they feel a burden because of that. And I think this thought has been going through my head a lot here recently, that, like, so many people can have way different experiences, but they share the same feeling at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And, like, that is so interesting to me, of like, the parallels between this conversation. And obviously, like, you have sense, so, like, you kind of, like, you definitely relate, yeah, like, both sides of it.
Yeah, I feel like so much of it, like, connecting it to being with Sen and, like, knowing her needs is this feeling of, like, proactivity versus reactivity. Mm-hmm. And, like, separating the word reactivity from dogs, like,
right,
I think, and even including it in dogs, I think so many people go through, and there's nothing wrong with this if it hasn't hurt them. There's so many people who go through life and assume that they can just, like, adjust and go with the flow and react to things and their reactions will be fine and everything will be okay. Like, there's so many people with dogs that are going to be like, okay, well, I can just walk my dog around the block and have them on a flexi and nothing bad has ever happened and maybe nothing bad will ever happen, probably, honestly. And those people are living, like, very reactively and their reactions are fine and,
right,
like,
it's not affecting them.
Like, they're gonna, it's not affecting them. Maybe they don't notice if it's affecting other people, or maybe it isn't affecting other people. But as soon as you know that, like, either your reactions are, like, inappropriate, like, maybe you have a dog that's reacting, or maybe your body has, like, a reaction to this thing that's in everything, mm-hmm, you have to start living proactively because you know that you can't just go with the flow. And I think that that's like kind of a sequence break for a lot of people, where a lot of people are not used to living that way. And at some extent, you do need to like relinquish control, but like being proactive can, and advocating for yourself or your dog can help in so many ways that it is like a mindset change. And it can be a dangerous mindset change for some people, but like it can also be really helpful.
Yeah. Honestly, and, like,
yeah.
I'm trying to think of, you said it can be a dangerous mindset change. Like, I'm trying to think, like, how? Like, I guess if you're, like,
I think
too
that,
scared, right? Like, if you're, like, too scared of the world.
I think it can be really easy to, what I mean is, like, I think it can be very easy to feel isolated if you are living in, if you are being proactive, then by definition, you're thinking of the future and you're planning ahead. And you, of course, always will need to be a little bit reactive. Like, I might go to a restaurant and find out that their menu has totally changed, and now I do need to think on the spot. Am I going to eat here and trust them or not? Like, I might need to, I might, an event might go longer, and my stomach might be growling, and I might be like, I need food, and there's food here, but I can't eat it. Like, what do I do? This has happened many times. And those are situations where like the average person can just be like reactive and be like, I'm just gonna eat something and that's fine. But if you're living in this like proactive state of mind, I think it's really easy to like panic when you finally have to be reactive, because you're, and I know like reactive has meaning, it's maybe not the best word to use in this conversation.
Right. Well,
but, like,
in this conversation, like, I think the definition that we're kind of talking about is proactive thinking ahead, reactive thinking on the spot.
Yeah. So it's like, if you know that being reactive is difficult, you're going to avoid it as much as you can. And usually you can. And every now and then you're going to get caught off guard. So I think it's sort of like the proactivity is super helpful, but it can be distracting to also, to like, you're, no matter what happens, you're going to have to think in the moment. And I think it could be easy to like not prepare for the moment, if that makes sense.
No, that does make
like
a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I'm glad I asked that question, because I liked how the conversation turned and like that whole like way of thinking. Cause I was like, oh, if you're proactive, like you're just always going to be like positive, proactive, prepared, like literally all the people.
Yeah.
Words.
Or like, yeah. But it's also like, let's say I prepare and let's say we're like in year one of Sen, and
right.
I know that she's super reactive on our block and very territorial about her space. I might say, like, I'm going to leave super early. I'm going to look both ways before I take her outside and make sure there's no one on our block. We're going to walk quickly. If something happens, I'm going to do this, this, and this. I have these tools. I have these treats.
Right.
I know I'm going to do this. And then suddenly something, a guy comes out of his car holding like a huge piece of wood or something.
Right.
And like, what do I do? I have all this planning and I'm like thinking about all my plans, but I don't have plans for this.
Mm.
And I think it's easy to be like, next time I'm going to plan even more. And like,
right.
I'm going to think even, and I'm going to worry even more about this. And it's easy to like, again, fall down like that path of doom and gloom and like,
yeah, of not having control. I feel like that's what it goes back to.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like obsessing over, and I should be clear, like I'm saying like obsessing and doom and gloom, like these are things that I do. I'm not being like, you shouldn't do this, like this is so bad, but like it does, I do it, and it's like feels bad.
I do it too. I mean, like with talking about like planning for reactions, like we're gonna, you know, avoid reactions and we're going to avoid all of the things that can happen. And this kind of like took a turn in the conversation, but it's like, whenever people say, if you know that they're scared of X, Y, and Z, don't put them in that situation. And it's like, I can't help a skateboarder coming out of nowhere. I can't help all of a sudden a car coming by and honking their horn obsessively and throwing a party in their car while they drive by. And now Layla's scared to death, tail tucked, running the other direction. Like, I couldn't plan for that. And it really, I don't know if you know, but I have this tattoo on my arm that says like observation over expectation. And it's this mantra or like saying, whatever you want to call it, that I've had around for like a really, really long time, probably since I was like a senior in high school or like early college. And I used to just like have it on a post-it note, and I kept this post-it note with me for like literally 5 years. And then whenever I got Layla, like, it just kept coming up because I was trying to be, like, proactive and be prepared. And then, like, plans, obviously, like, were failing. And it basically is this whole conversation, like, in the moment where I had to be, like, reactive and think on spot. Instead of, like, thinking logically, my, like, emotions just, like, really took over. And I was anxious. I was frantic. I was, like, not thinking about, like, what is the best thing to do in this situation. I just was, like, trying to get out of it. And it, you know, obviously put us in, like, difficult situations at times. And so this, like, mantra or saying, like, really helped me to slow down and, like, observe what was happening instead of just, like, always expecting everything to go as planned.
Yeah, I also think that, like, the other kind of, like, danger of planning and being extremely proactive is shame and guilt. Mm-hmm. I think that they kind of come hand in hand in that, like, so I've recently been, like, obsessed with Struggle Care on TikTok and her podcast.
Okay.
And I love how she talks about, she does a lot of stuff about, like, ADHD and, like, how, I think she has a, her book is where I, like, met her, I guess. Someone recommended me her book, which is called How to Keep House While Drowning.
Okay.
And it's so good. And it's, I love her now. I'm, like, obsessed. New obsession.
Yeah.
But she talks about guilt and she talks a lot about, like, moral neutrality. Mm-hmm. So, like, an example is, like, let's say I'm a person who struggles with guilt, which I am.
I feel like everyone probably is, but yeah.
Yeah. And I plan all day that I'm going to do laundry tomorrow. And then I keep saying, I'm going to do it. And then something comes up and I don't do it. And now I feel like shit. And I'm like, I feel so shameful and guilty that, like, I did all this planning, or, like, I take Sun out and something goes wrong. And now I feel like I should have planned for that. And I feel so guilty and shameful. And the reason she talks about, like, moral neutrality is she's like, okay, well, not doing your laundry is morally neutral. Maybe it hurts you because you don't have clothing,
right.
But not having clothing is the problem. It's not that you messed up. It's right. That, like, you are doing these tasks, like, your space. The thing that she says is, like, your space should, like, you should not serve your space. Your space should serve you. And I'm just like, yes, someone needed to tell me this. Like,
yeah.
She's like, this is your home. You're safe in it. Like, you, no matter what has happened in your past, like, it does not come into your home because all of your care tasks, like, serve you, not the other way around. Like, you don't exist to do laundry. You're
right.
Doing laundry so that you have clean clothes, so that you can wear the clothes that you like and have a good time.
Right, and feel joy
and you
in
don't,
them.
Yeah. Yeah, and you don't do dishes so that you can do dishes. You do dishes so that you can have a usable sink and have dishes that are clean and create meals and, like, those dishes don't exist because you're a bad person. They exist because you made a meal for your family and you really liked it and you enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how she talks about, like, home care tasks. And I'm just like, oh my God, like, this can go into everything. Like,
yeah, no, like, it really can. Yeah.
Like, failing is morally neutral. It doesn't mean it's not a good thing and it's not a bad thing. It's a neutral thing. Like, anything that comes out of it obviously will happen. But, like, it's not your fault if you went outside and you didn't expect X, Y, and Z to happen and you had a bad time. It's not your fault for not planning for that. Or, like,
right.
Of course, you can take that information and move forward and do better next time. But, like, it doesn't mean that you did something morally bad. It's like you just messed up.
Yeah. You have
and
to
then
like...
with gluten, it's like, yeah. With gluten, it's like very similar where it's like I can plan for days and know exactly what restaurant, exactly what my, like, script is going to be that I'm going to say to them. And then they're like, oh, we don't have that meal. And it's easy for a person to be like, I didn't plan enough. I should have brought something. I should have done this. I should have done this and feel guilty. But, like, at the end of the day, like, you tried your best and failing is morally neutral and you need to eat. So, like, do what you can to eat. And, like, fill your body. And then maybe you can eat again later to have a full meal if you can't have a full meal here.
Right.
And I think, like, that cycle, that's, like, why I was trying to say, like, being proactive is, like, amazing. But I think that it's dangerous to think that it's, like, the only solution to everything.
Yeah, like, the end all be all. Yeah. I like love the morally neutral like mindset shift that who did you say? Struggle Care? Struggle Talk? What
yeah. was it? Struggle Care, and I believe okay. her name is Casey Davis.
Okay.
But she's Struggle Care on TikTok.
Yeah, I'll have to look her up.
Yeah.
But I love that, like, morally neutral. It's something that I've, well, that, not that, like, exact wording, but, like, that kind of concept around, like, guilt and shame. I've thought about that a lot here recently. Especially around money, and like it's something that I've thought a lot with my, or I've talked about a lot with like, my mentor that I've been working with, and like just the thought of like if I spend money, like then I feel guilty, but like I spent that money to like have a good time and like go on vacation, and it's yeah, it's a very similar like thought process to a lot of the other things yeah. that we were talking about. But I wanted to talk a little bit about Sin and her scent detection and kind of what you've been doing for that, with that, like any resources that you have and like maybe what it's going to look like whenever you're done. And just talk about that before we wrap up.
So with scent detection, I am, or specifically gluten detection, I am very, very new at it. So I can point people towards like resources, but I'm not necessarily going to be like the best person to go to if you like have questions. We are working with Delta Tales. So far, I've had a really good experience with them. There are a few different companies that have trained gluten detection dogs. If you're looking to work with someone, I highly recommend that you only work with a trainer who has done gluten detection before. There are a lot of people who don't know what they're doing, and you can get very sick by handling gluten. And that is important to remember. You'll be okay if you work with someone who knows what they're doing. But, like, right. for example, or, like, my number one thing that I'm going to just, like, say is don't work with a powdered allergen ever. Like, don't just have a powdered version of your allergen. Powder gets everywhere.
Yeah,
and
that's kind of yeah. what I was thinking. I was like, that doesn't yeah. sound good.
But there are people who don't know what they're doing that might assume that that's where you would start because you can buy powdered gluten. So I have seen, obviously, like, a scent detection trainer who knows what they're doing shouldn't tell you to use powdered allergen, but you never know. I know people who have been told that, and, like, you can get very sick. And you can contaminate, like, your entire kit and just right. not have anything clear to train your dog on. It just doesn't work. We did scent work just for fun a few years ago. We took a class a few years ago, literally last year. We took a class in, like, AKC scent work through Fenzi Dog Sports Academy. And we had a really good time. And then I kind of dropped it for a while. And then I was, like, learning more about gluten detection and thinking, like, this would be something that's, like, really helpful. And now, like, that I'm, now that I know that it is a thing that I can do, I'm, like, I'll start thinking about it. Because, like, when I was at the Ivan workshop, every day I, like, literally bought my lunch at Whole Foods because I was, like, there's safe food for me here. Whatever.
Right.
Like, I'll be safe. And I'll get lots of snacks. And then I'll have snacks. So I would drive there. And there were a couple times that I was looking at, like, a salad or something. And I'm, like, I'm not going to risk it. But if I had a gluten detection dog, I could just be like, is this good?
Right.
Can I eat this?
Right.
And yeah, and the thing about gluten detection to remember is that, like, they cannot make food safe for you. You still have to know how to find safe food, but they can help you, like, kind of restore your trust in your food a little bit and, like, just feel more confident about feeding yourself and feeling less like you have to read. I mean, you do still have to read everything, but, like,
right.
you don't have to obsess quite as much. Like, if I'm looking between a few salads and I know one, and I don't know, they look gluten-free, the ingredients look okay, but I'm, like, a little bit worried about prep, I could have her check it. And for Sen specifically, she is honestly really good in public. I don't know if we'd ever consider her a full service dog. I would, in, like, my dream world, I'd love her to be, but I also have to be, like, realistic that she's a rescue street dog. Mm-hmm. And if our perfect looks like her working only at home, I am totally happy with that. Because realistically, having her check food for me in the house is still helpful.
Yeah,
because I order takeout sometimes and I don't want to get sick from takeout. So even that is like a very helpful task.
Yeah, or like if you go to the grocery store and then you go to the park to like eat your salad or whatever.
Yeah.
You can like have her check both salads, and if she like alerts to one, then you're like, "All right, Nick, you're eating that one."
Yep, exactly. Yeah, or like there's a lot of different ways that it can help. It's just, like, remembering that, like, she's not going to make food safe, but she can help me feel more trust in my food. And that's super helpful.
Oh, yeah,
the other thing is, like, I live in New York City, and a lot of places are dog-friendly. So if she can only work in dog-friendly spaces, that is still a huge help for me.
Mm-hmm.
And if she can't and she can only work at home, that's fine. If she completely fails and tells me that she doesn't want to do it anymore and she hates it, and then that's fine, and I will have learned a lot and I can apply it to like my next dog.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the outlook that I'm trying to look at it through, where it's like every outcome is a success.
Right, totally. And if not, like, you're still having fun. Like,
yeah, no, we're having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're still doing a lot of like searches, like room searches. And
are you like using gluten containers, or are you just using something else?
We're using pure gluten.
Okay.
So funny. It's like, it's literally like the funniest. I think it's hilarious to joke about gluten. Maybe baby celiacs are more scared of it than me, but I treat it like it's like, I think it's so funny to like pull the jar of gluten out of the freezer and look at Nick and be like, this is pure poison. I could I could eat this right now.
Here we go.
I think it's hilarious.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's just finding humor and like, it is funny. Just by nature, I think it's hilarious that I am like, I will get so sick if I eat bread. And it's such a common thing. So I make jokes about it a lot. Mm-hmm. But you cope how you can.
Yeah. Understandable. I make jokes about Layla sometimes too, like the amount of times that like she would have a reaction to like something dumb on the street and it would be like our world was ending, but then come inside and be like, this bitch just was scared of like a paper bag, like haha, like here's... so
and you know that like to them they believe that their world is ending and it is serious.
Yeah, in the moment it's very serious.
Yeah, but if you help them through it and you're, like, doing better, you're allowed to laugh.
Like, right, yeah. We get inside, and I'm, like, telling Bobby, I'm like, this bitch, guess what she had a reaction to this time? We have to cope.
Yeah, you cope somehow, and, like, you bring it down to the level of, like, how do you talk about everything else? And if you talk about this one thing that is huge in your life in a way that is, like, extremely different than the way you talk about everything else, it's going to continue to be scary and it's going to continue to hurt you. And if you joke about it, it still hurts you, but at least you're funny. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. How do you, like, actually get the gluten? Like, you said that the gluten in your, like, in your freezer in the jar, is it, like, already in the jar that you're using to train with? Or do you have to, like, scoop it out or something and put it in, like, a new jar? Because, like, this sounds... like, I'm very curious.
It's so funny. I won't explain the exact process because a lot of trainers are really, like, weird about sharing how to prep samples because they're worried that if someone does it wrong, they could make themselves sick and, like, complain. Right. So starch can wash away. Gluten cannot wash away. I have flour that is 80% gluten and 20% starch. It's called gluten flour. It's the funniest joke that I have. It lives in my basement. It does not touch my food. I'm scared of it. And when I prep my samples, I do it in my slop sink downstairs just in case, which is like in the laundry room, the communal laundry room. And then I've got like disposable gloves on and utensils that live downstairs or are made of plastic and are disposable, and I prep my samples for like a month or something, or a while, because I usually freeze them. I have a bunch in my freezer right now, so I won't need to do it for a while, But I think it's hilarious. I wear a mask. I pretend I'm like a little scientist who's like pouring poison. Yeah. But the reality is it's just like bread flour. I think it's so funny.
Yeah. No, that is hilarious. I was so curious. I was like, do you, like, is it already pre-made samples? I was like, do you have to make the samples? Then,
I know some people who will use, there's these, like, scent tube things. They're like a piece of plastic that'll absorb scent and hold it for 6 months. A lot of people use it for, they're kind of new-ish, I think. I've just heard of them recently.
Yeah, I've never heard of those.
People will use them for scent work sometimes. Like, they'll scent it with birch oil or pseudo or gluten or whatever you're using. And then it's like, it's not gluten, it's just a piece of plastic that might be contaminated and you probably shouldn't lick it, but it's not gluten. But for me, I have like tiny baggies full of like a tiny bit of gluten, and I have them in my freezer, and before I use them, I like defrost them, and then they enter my garbage once they're done.
Right.
And used.
Can you use a sample like how many times? Like how long will a sample last?
I try not to use them for more than a few days because they can get, you don't want them to get moldy because it is just like wet flour at the end of the day. So I'll store them in my fridge and like, they're fine for a little while, but just in case you don't want them to get moldy. And then once we get off of like pure gluten, in theory, we will be working a lot more with like other things, but we're still very early in training.
Gotcha.
Don't super know what's ahead.
Why did I think that, like, in the tiny jars, it was just going to be, like, a piece of bread? Do people do that? Like, literally just a piece of bread? Or no?
I don't know, honestly. I feel like once... So, from what I've heard, and I could be totally wrong because I don't know anything about anything, but from my understanding, like, when you're introducing the scent, it has to be very, like, this is just the scent and nothing else.
Gotcha.
But once they know the scent, you can be a little bit more like, let's check this bread, let's check this lettuce, let's check this rice, let's check rice with, like, one piece of bread in it. Like, then you can get a little bit more loose, I guess, or creative with, like, other scents. Like, the way one scent worked, trainer described it to me was like, oh, you're just going to be working containers forever, basically. And you're going to be like, okay, this container has gluten in it, this one doesn't, and now okay, this container has rice and this container has rice and gluten, or this container has lettuce and this one has lettuce and gluten. Maybe like here's one gluten containing flour and then here is like a gluten-free rice flour or something. Again, not powdered, but whatever, you get the idea. So the way that she explained it to me that made a lot of sense was just like, you're kind of searching containers forever. And all the other scents in like in the container are just a distraction.
That's how
I understood it as someone who's not a detection trainer and not a like, I'm just trying my best.
No, that makes sense. I guess my last question too is, what is scent's indicator? Does she sit? Is she gonna paw? Is she gonna boop you? What is she doing?
Right now I have a down because she
gets
very excited about it and she like fully slams her body into the ground, but I might
I need to see a video.
She gets really excited. She loves it. Well, she loves like being correct, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
She like she'll mess around and like be very silly, but she loves knowing the right answer and just like doing it. And sometimes she's flashy about it and it's so funny. But I'm thinking of changing it to something else, but I know a lot of people do the like paw lift indication because it's like, if you're in public, it's kind of subtle and it's not like your dog. Like the other thing is if you're having your dog check like 30 things, you might not want them to have to like down, stand, down, stand, down, stand. So we might change to like a paw lift or a boop or something, but
change it to a handstand.
It's so funny.
But I'm sure you probably heard that before.
Yeah, that would be so funny. But from what I understand, it's like, it's good for it to be something that they kind of already, not like already do, but like something that kind of comes naturally to them because they're going to have to do it. Like,
right.
In theory, like over and over and over again. And you don't want it to be like something that is difficult for them or like something weird.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Wow. This was a very informative conversation. I thought we got through a lot of stuff, and I so enjoyed the parallels that, like, came up in between celiacs, or, like, just any kind of, like, chronic illness, and owning a dog with, you know, well, either only owning a dog in general, or just owning a dog with reactivity or behavioral issues. So thank you so much for coming on and talking about everything.
Yeah, it was super fun. Love talking.
Love talking, yes.
I love hearing myself talk.
Yeah. Yes. Okay, well, do you have anything else? Any information, tips, tricks before we wrap up?
If you're a baby celiac, find friends who, like, reach out, find your local communities, check Facebook groups. It's much easier when you have the support of others. If you have a child who is celiac, like, help them in any, or especially, like, in freshly diagnosed celiac, like, they can do things, they just need more support. And sometimes as a parent, like, you have to be all the support that for them until they can be it for themselves. And it sounds like a lot, but you can do it. And if your friend has celiac, don't tell them that you would die if you had to give up bread, because it's kind of mean and it is hurtful. And if you're accommodating someone who has a celiac or other restrictive diet, just ask what they need, because they know better than you. And yeah. Say, like, honestly, like, if someone reaches out and tells me, like, hey, I know I invited you over, we're going to have some snacks, we're going to have this, this, and this, is there anything I can get for you? Even if my answer is, I can't eat any of that and I will bring my own food, having someone reach out and, like, offer that and just ask what I need is, like, so helpful. And it, like, feels very good to, like, feel like they're listening. So if you don't know how to help someone, just ask and they will know. Like, they will know what they need. And if they don't, then, like, maybe you can just be like, these are some options.
Yeah.
Hopefully that's a good, like,
yes,
little burst of information for all yes. the different types of people.
Good wrap-up tips. Okay. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening to another episode of the Dog Mom Mentality Podcast. If you like this episode, please rate, review, share to your friends, share to your story, share to all the people, share to all of your celiac friends, and we will talk to you next week. Thank you all for listening to another episode of the Dog Mom Mentality Podcast. My name is Caroline. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at Dog Mom Mentality. And if you haven't already, please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you are listening. I hope you have a great rest of your day. And if nothing else, I hope you get to play with your dog today.